Welcome to MSU Today on 94.5 FM and AM 870 WKAR. I'm Russ White. At 6 past 4 following news, Kirk Heinze talks with the sustainability-focused mayor of Grand Rapids, Rosalind Bliss.
My hope as mayor is to inspire and encourage people to step up, but also provide them an opportunity to step up and get involved. You know, identifying those spark plugs in your community who want to get involved and then empowering them to be a part of it is an important part of actually moving things forward.
We'll hear Kirk Gibson's May 5th MSU commencement address, too.
When you leave here today, you will carry Michigan State's reputation with you. I hope you honor that, and I hope you do it proudly. But this is not Las Vegas. What happened here must not stay here.
That and more MSU Today begins at 4:06.
Now listen, you guys, you know what? Normal kids would have been stoked to slack off, but not you guys, because you're not normal. You're special. And because I think you guys have the right attitude, I think it's time we started our new class project.
A science project?
No, it's called
MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
You're tuned to Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on 94.5 FM and AM 870 WKAR. Here's Kirk Heinze.
Well, as has become customary on Greening the Great Lakes, it's time to get an update on sustainability initiatives in one of the world's greenest cities, right here in Michigan, Grand Rapids. And with us is Mayor Rosalind Bliss, who not too long ago gave her second State of the City address referring to Grand Rapids, an objective as a city of empowerment. Mayor Bliss, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Your State of the City address was very compelling, and I want to get right to it. One of the major initiatives that you announced in the context of empowerment was your Grand Rapids Racial Equity Initiative. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'm glad to. In fact, just this week, we were able to secure funding from the Kellogg Foundation to support that effort. And so a couple things. Last year, racial equity was one of my priorities as well, and I anticipate it will be the entire time that I'm mayor because it's a pretty significant systemic change we're trying to do here. And so in the past year, I've been working really closely with the Government Alliance on Race and Equity, which is a national organization, looking at what we can do internally here at City Hall to embed racial equity into the work that we do, both with policies and budget, and then also to diversify our workforce. And so the Grand Rapids Racial Equity Initiative builds on that work and launches it into more of a community initiative. So we'll continue to do the work internally, but soon we'll launch a community-wide stakeholder group looking at what are our goals as a community to eliminate racial disparities that exist. And then with that, we'll do a city-specific racial equity scorecard. So we know where we are today, and then we'll be able to set some goals based on where we want to be 3 years from now.
Yeah, that dashboard or scorecard is something that Grand Rapids has been doing for quite a while, and you do it with all of your major initiatives.
We do. We do. Data is so critical. You know, what you measure matters, and you don't know where you want to be unless you know where you are today, and so that data piece is critical.
As part of this larger umbrella of racial equity initiative, in your State of the City, you referred to a couple of other things as well that are part and parcel, but you mentioned an affordable housing trust, which you've got seeded with a substantial amount of money.
Yeah, so affordable housing, unfortunately, is a significant issue in our city. There's a lot of great things happening in Grand Rapids, and we have incredible momentum and growth, and with that comes challenges. And one of them is that a lot of people who don't make as much money or who are low income or in poverty are being pushed out of their neighborhoods. And so we're seeing pretty significant displacement and gentrification. And my hope as mayor is that we're a city where, regardless of your income, regardless of how large your family is, you're able to find a place to live here if you want to call Grand Rapids home. And right now, that's hard for a lot of people to do. And so we, last year, as part of our budget, we created an affordable housing trust fund and are seeding that with $1.2 million. And the intent is to grow that each year. In fact, just the other day, we got a $50,000 donation from our Grand Rapids Housing Commission to contribute to that fund. And we're in the process now of figuring out how do we use those funds as quickly as possible to have an impact.
Well, that was my next question. In terms of the affordable housing, would this be new housing? Would this be renovation of existing housing? How do you envision this unfolding?
Yeah, so last year in November, I appointed a housing advisory committee, and they're in the process of making recommendations on how those dollars should be spent. I think it'll probably be a multi-pronged approach. Building more affordable housing takes time, and we have an urgent need right now. So we're looking at, what can we do around helping with down payment assistance, other types of short-term solutions as well as long-term solutions.
Another piece of this whole racial equity initiative that you talked at some length about, and it's always fun to talk about, is entrepreneurship, especially entrepreneurship for minority businesses.
Yeah, that's near and dear to my heart. You know, what makes cities great are the locally owned businesses, and it makes us unique. And people love their neighborhoods, and largely because of the neighborhood businesses are there. And so we want to make sure that we support them and we support our local economy. But specifically, how do we support minority and women-owned businesses? So we're doing a few things here. Internally at City Hall, we're looking at our own procurement process, what we can do to support local businesses, being more intentional around a local preference policy. But then also we're partnering with a nonprofit here in town called Local First. And we're working with them to do a campaign to encourage people to shop locally. And we're calling that the GR Local Challenge, and specifically in encouraging people to get out into neighborhoods they haven't been before and to visit locally owned businesses that are in different neighborhoods but also owned by individuals from our Hispanic community and African-American community. Every year I select a book and I ask the community to join me in reading a book and expanding our knowledge around an area. And this year I selected the book Small Giants. Again, just providing information to people about why it's so important to support those small businesses and companies in your community that are doing incredible work, and truly why they're a fabric of our community and they need our support to thrive. And, it's so interesting. Last year, we spent a lot of time and energy supporting startups and entrepreneurs. And a lot of those folks that I talked to, it's more than just supporting them get off the ground, but it's supporting them throughout, their growth as well. And the saddest thing is to have, a restaurant open up and then a year and a half later close down because they weren't able to get traction.
My guest is Rosalind Bliss. She is the mayor of Grand Rapids, one of America's and the world's greenest cities. In her recent State of the City address, she provided some background on some new initiatives and talked about some ongoing initiatives in the city of Grand Rapids that are part and parcel of why it's one of the greenest cities in the United States. And one of the things that we've featured on this program before, and it's got a lot of energy, Restoring the Rapids initiative. There's been progress made over the last couple of years since we last looked at this.
There has been. We are plugging along. This is a pretty massive project, an estimated $35 million project that will involve removing, we have five dams that run through the heart of our city in the Grand River, and it'll entail removing those dams. And of course, with that comes a long process of making sure that you have all your ducks in a row, but it also includes working with state departments and federal departments. So that's where we are right now. We've been working pretty actively for the last 2 years on two things. One is submitting permits to the different departments. So that's EPA, DEQ, Army Corps, FEMA. So there's a lot of departments involved. But then we've been securing easements along the river because part of the goal is to connect the trails on both sides of the river. Through the process, we found out that we have entire species of endangered mussels, that snuffbox mussels that we have to, so now we're working with endangered species to move those mussels and put them back after the project. And then we also need to add a lamprey barrier to prevent lamprey from swimming upstream. So once we have those two things done, then we'll be able to start removing the dams and putting the boulders back in the river. And hopefully, our hope is that that will be done within the next 4 to 5 years. And then on the funding piece, we've been working at identifying local funds, private dollars that will contribute, as well as public dollars. And we are really excited about 2 months ago to learn that we received $5 million from the federal government through an agriculture grant that will go towards that project. So lots of good things happening, and it's a pretty long, detailed process, but we're moving along.
Well, you have, as part of your city government, the Office of Energy and Sustainability, and they oversee a number of initiatives that we've talked about before. You work on recycling, on clean energy, and even more recently, green mobility. And you've one of your pet initiatives has to do with bicycle safety.
Yeah, so, yeah, and I'll fill you in on where we are. We have a lot of different environmental sustainability initiatives. One of them is around bicycle safety, adding bike lanes. So right now we have about 80 miles of bike lanes in the city. Our goal is to get above 100, but we want that to be a very thoughtful process. And we also want to make sure that, that folks are safe and they're educated. And 2 years ago, Grand Rapids was unfortunately identified as one of the cities where we had the highest bike car crash rate. So we worked last year, we actually kicked it off last year in May. We kicked off a really comprehensive education campaign, both for drivers and for riders, to educate individuals about the rules of the road, basically. And within that time, we have seen a pretty dramatic reduction in both fatalities and crashes. So we'll continue on that campaign to make sure that people are aware of what the rules are. So bike lanes is a big one. We actually just recently approved funding to do a feasibility study to add bike share downtown and throughout our neighborhoods. So based on the outcome of that study, we'll decide if we want to move forward on a bike share program. So those are exciting initiatives, but we also are doing a lot of work around adding trees, increasing our urban canopy to 40%. So last year I kicked off a mayor's greening initiative. We planted last year well over 500 trees in the course of 2 days, largely in the downtown area and along our expressways. And then I have my second annual, so this year's tree planting will actually occur at the end of this month in a neighborhood that really needs additional trees.
Yeah, I had that as one of my topics as well, and you covered that that beautifully. What about infrastructure? When you gave your State of the City, you got quite a bit of applause when you talked about repairing some potholes.
Yeah, we've kicked off construction season. So if you're in Grand Rapids, you'll see a lot of cones on the road. And we're able to do that because our taxpayers agreed to do a 15-year income tax increase extension and dedicate those dollars to roads. And so part of that is both streets and sidewalks. And so we've been pretty active in identifying streets that we need to do immediately and save them from deteriorating, but then also streets that need complete reconstruction. So we have hundreds of street projects that we'll be doing this summer, this construction year. And you're right, people are pretty happy about that.
We're talking on a number of sustainability fronts with Grand Rapids Mayor Rosalind Bliss, infrastructure. But one that caught my eye, and I think it is so neat, is a Parks and Recreation strategic plan to green up your schoolyards and to connect kids to parks. Tell us a little bit about that one.
Yeah, so this is an initiative we launched last year. I did this in partnership with Grand Rapids Public Schools. We have a great relationship with the superintendent and the school board. And we launched a Connecting Children to Nature campaign, looking at what we can do to get kids out into green space, into nature, and use nature and all of these amazing assets we have in the city as learning laboratories for kids. So we've been pretty active in doing that. And then we kicked off the update of our Parks Master Plan. And in that plan is a lot of really specific things that we can do to connect children to nature, to green playgrounds, to identify where we need to add green space in what neighborhoods, as well as connect trails and connect the different parks throughout the city, and also add programming that will increase participation among families and children throughout the community.
You said something in your speech that really resonated with me about how all of these initiatives are fine in and of themselves, but the real trick is to get everybody working in concert with a common goal. People listening to this interview might, from different cities around the state of Michigan, might say, boy, they've got so much going on in Grand Rapids. How in the world are they affording all of these things?
Yeah, you know, my background is social work, so I've always had a very holistic approach. And, you know, even my very first year as mayor, I set out goals in a number of areas, just knowing that they're interconnected. And I think the important thing is that you identify your partners in each of those areas. And every single community has, you know, their greatest asset are their people. It's people who are willing to step up and be involved and be engaged and help figure out how to make something happen. And so my hope as mayor is to inspire and encourage people to step up, but also provide them an opportunity to step up and get involved. And so we cannot accomplish any of these things without our amazing partners in the city. So even our work around bike lanes, we have a West Michigan Bicycle Coalition. You know, the work we're doing with the Urban Canopy. We have an urban forest project and an urban forest committee here at the city. The work we're doing around agriculture. We just created an urban ag committee. And so, you know, identifying those spark plugs in your community who want to get involved, and then empowering them to be a part of it is an important part of actually moving things forward. Same thing with the racial equity work. There's a lot of amazing people and organizations in this community doing equity work. And my hope is that we bring them together, because if we all collectively work together, we're going to have a greater impact more quickly.
Well, Rosalind, our time is up. This has been a great pleasure. I hope that we can do this every year and continue the tradition.
Sounds good. I would love that.
I've been talking with Rosalind Bliss, the mayor of the great city of Grand Rapids. We've been talking about a number of sustainability initiatives that she featured in her recent State of the City address. Mayor Bliss, thanks so much for being a guest on Greening the Great Lakes.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're listening to Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on 94.5 FM and AM 870 WKAR. Here's more with Kirk Heinze.
Well, my next guest is a highly acclaimed public speaker, consultant, and author, among many other endeavors, and one of her signature passions is what she characterizes as, quote, getting back to the truth on food, unquote. Well, she has a new book out. It's called Food Truths From Farm to Table, 25 Surprising Ways to Shop and Eat Without Guilt. She is Michelle Payne, founder and president of Cause Matters, a very proud Spartan, and in the spirit of full disclosure, a longtime friend and colleague. Michelle, congratulations on the book and welcome back to the program.
Well, thanks, Kirk. It's great to be here. I always love talking to folks in Michigan.
Yeah, I know. I'm Michigan born and bred.
Exactly, and a very proud Spartan, as you said.
Your organization, before we're going to get to the book here for the balance of the interview, but your business is Cause Matters. That's an interesting name for a business, but how did you derive that title for your business?
Well, I've actually been in business for 16 years now, and basically, as you know from looking at the book, I have a quote hanging in my office that says, "A life without cause is a life without effect," and I have never been able to find the author to attribute that to, but it's really a driving passion of mine. And so Cause Matters was named because I happen to believe deeply in that the cause of connecting farm and food matters a great deal. And as I work with my clients on a consulting basis, I try to get them to help others understand why their cause matters. So thus, the cause matters.
Well, in one way that you're helping, and then we'll turn to the, you have authored your second book. Why did you decide to write Food Truths From Farm to Table? And how does it build on No More Food Fights, your earlier book?
I wrote Food Truths From Farm to Table because I really saw a huge disconnect throughout the course of my career, from my time as an undergraduate at Michigan State to current day. I saw a disconnect in reality of what's happening and the way farm is being produced and marketing mistruth. I saw a disconnect between farmers and dietitians and other experts, and I saw a disconnect between reality and facades around food. And so When I wrote the first book, No More Food Fights, I actually had the idea for the second book come to me at the very end. But because of a number of life circumstances and also because of the energy that it takes to write a book, it took me 4 years to get Food Truths from Farm to Table done. But basically, it is designed to serve as a guide to the grocery store to reduce guilt and overcome confusion around food.
In terms of, you refer to people who may feel guilt when they're buying certain foods or when they're going shopping and you're targeting. What percentage, roughly, what does your research tell you? How many Americans actually feel the emotions that you're concerned with?
Well, there's a number of studies out there that you can look at, but I guess to me what probably meant the most was my anecdotal research, sitting around kitchen tables with wealthy moms, with suburbia moms, with people that are not on a farm, and hearing from them that they just want to feel good when they go to the grocery store to buy their food. When they buy and serve and prepare food, they want to feel like they are making the right decision for their family. And as a mom, I can relate to that. I mean, who does not want to take proper care of their children? And so when you look at guilt and confusion, guilt is definitely a female emotion, but confusion seems to reign supreme around food these days because there's so many claims, from absence label claims such as hormone-free, which is a complete falsehood because all food has hormones in it, to studies that show that 80% of Americans, according to Oklahoma State University, think that food should be labeled if it has DNA in it. And, of course, if you know the biology of living organisms, you know that all food has DNA in it, and just as all food has hormones in it. And so it's some of those that really points to the confusion, as well as the fact that only 1.5% of our population today is on a farm or ranch. Two-thirds lives in the city or suburban areas. And there's a disconnect because, quite frankly, agriculture has not done a great job about talking how we raise food.
No question. You have the 25, and we don't want to give away all 25 food truths or people won't buy the book, but I want to hit a couple. You just covered one, but one that's sort of near and dear to you, I know, and one that I learned in my years at Michigan State. Number three, animal welfare is an hourly concern on farms and ranches.
Absolutely, and because of the fact that I have dairy cattle, as you all know, Kirk, and when you look at the opportunities to consider animal welfare, this really gets to the why we produce food the way that we do, which if you happen to be a person in agriculture listening to this, I would encourage you to think about how you can explain the why to people. So, for example, when you look at animal welfare, whether it's dairy cattle, whether it's chickens, whether it is hogs, some of the practices that we have look incredibly cruel. But in reality, they are to protect the animals. So, for example, when you look at removing teeth on pigs so they can't bite each other, when you look at filing down beaks on chickens so they can't peck each other to death, when you look at removing horns on cattle so they can't cause damage to the farmers and ranchers or each other, the context around animal welfare is something that I think we've not done a great job talking about. And typically what I find when I have these conversations explaining the why, people are okay with it because it does boil down to a safety issue. And animals can be incredibly cruel. A lot of folks don't realize that.
Absolutely. Another one, because sugar is really taking a beating these days in the press, but it was number 17. Sugar, salt, and moderation are a natural part of a planned diet. I know that you would probably agree that, and the research tends to suggest that we are, particularly kids, consuming way too much added sugar, but moderation is the key, right?
Absolutely, and throughout the book, I was very transparent as far as talking about my rather infamous sweet tooth and the what would be considered, quote, bad foods, unquote, and I would encourage us not to use that word, that my daughter and I consume, because food is at the center of our family traditions. And so whether we're at the county fair showing cattle or whether we're on vacation, you know, we have some traditions that center around food that probably isn't the most healthy. But we also counter that with exercise and moderation. And while we do not need to be consuming more sugar, I do think people have gone a little overboard in both sugar and salt because sodium is a natural preservative. And sugar naturally occurs in fruits, and that doesn't make it bad. It's just the fact that we're pouring in vast quantities of sugar and not countering that with exercise. The key statement in that particular food truth is moderation, and that's where a lot of folks are really lacking in the U.S. today.
My guest is Michelle Payne. She's the author of a new book. It's just out, Food Truths from Farm to Table, 25 Surprising Ways to Shop and Eat Without Guilt. Michelle, this interview always goes so quickly, but we'd be remiss if we didn't let folks out there know where they can get your book.
Absolutely. Well, you can get Food Truths from Farm to Table on Amazon. It was actually listed as the number one new release in January, so we were excited about that. You can also order signed copies on my website at Cause Matters, or you can pick it up at bookstores like Barnes & Noble, Target, and others.
Yeah, that website again is causematters.com. Michelle, after folks read the book, and again, your passion is science, your passion is communication, your passion is getting the food thing right. What do you hope that your readers take away from the book?
My hope is that people feel good about food. Again, food should be at the center of family celebrations. It is a basic necessity. It's sustenance. It's designed to power our bodies, not to make us feel guilty. So whether you're interested in sustainability or whether you are interested in chemicals or whether you are interested in just saving time in the grocery store, it's designed to give you permission to feel good about your food, because that's really what we should be doing. I mean, it's something that food obviously is a part of our daily life multiple times a day, so we might as well learn to enjoy it and to treat it with respect rather than feel guilty about it.
And again, I think, like you said earlier, it does build on No More Food Fights, Growing a Productive Farm and Food Conversation. People reading the book will, consumers will know a lot more about agriculture, what a wonderful industry it is, and how the great preponderance of agricultural producers want the same things the consumers want.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was so excited because I had 55-plus contributors from farmers and ranchers to dietitians and doctors and veterinarians and food scientists contribute their own story. So really what Food Truths from Farm to Table does is try to translate the science through story and to try to make it, again, a very approachable read and something where people, frankly, find common sense around the food plate.
Well, it's a great read. I'm about 20% through it. I'm going to finish it up. She is Michelle Payne. She is the founder and president of Cause Matters. And her new book out, Food Truths from Farm to Table, 25 Surprising Ways to Shop and Eat Without Guilt. It is the Prager Press. Again, Michelle, so proud of you as a Spartan and as a former student, your second book. Wonderful job, and best of luck with it.
Thank you, Kirk, and thanks for having me.
That was Kirk Heinze with a sustainability-focused Greening of the Great Lakes segment inside MSU Today on 94.5 FM and AM 870 WKAR. To read Kirk's blog and hear more Greening of the Great Lakes content, please visit mlive.com/environment.
WKAR.
This is MSU Today on 94.5 FM and AM 870 WKAR. Here's Kirk Gibson's May 5th MSU commencement address.
President Simon, distinguished guests, faculty members, ladies and gentlemen, fellow Spartans, I am delighted to join you as we salute the outstanding graduates. In honoring them, we pay tribute to their hard work, tenacity, and devotion to excellence. We also and especially salute the parents, families, teachers, and friends whose encouragement, love, and support have touched their lives and made this day possible. No one can visit this beautiful campus without feeling a sense of history. So much of what we think of as great about America has been taught, researched, and lived here. In so many ways, the quality of its faculty and academic programs, its diverse and highly accomplished student body, its storied past, and its promising future, Michigan State University remains one of the world's leading centers of higher education and research. It also is a place where friendships begin and last for a long time. For example, I recently attended a reunion with my teammates from the 1978 Big Ten Championship football team. It's always a great time to catch up and rehash old stories. But it's strange, because whenever we get together, the stories change a little bit every year. I trust my version, of course, having a phenomenal memory for even the smallest of details. But some of those guys, well, let's just say the years have clouded their memories. For instance, 2 years ago, we were talking about how we used to stop by the men's IM pool to jump off the 10-meter board after returning from a late dinner in East Lansing at 2:30 a.m. That was before they put up the high fence to keep people from leaping off the platform unattended. I was the guy saying, "No, let's don't do that, guys." That's exactly how it was. I remember it if it was yesterday. But to hear them some 30 years later, not only did I not do that, they say I was the first one off the board. And then this year we go again, as we do it every year. Some new guys join us and they rehash that story again. It changes. This time, they say I was naked. So please, take my advice. Keep recording every moment of your life on your smartphone. That way you'll have proof 30 years from now. And when they change the story, you can unincriminate yourself and look very smart. Come to think of it, at our next reunion, I'm going to make those guys start calling me Dr. Gibson. And who knows, from now on, I may dish out some good advice to people who didn't even ask for it. Like today. Like right now. So let's dig in. I always considered giving advice very serious business. Who can forget the story of the Greek philosopher Socrates? He went around giving great advice, and they poisoned him. I think I'm safe because, unlike Socrates, I don't have a perfect formula for success, but I have seen things that successful people share, qualities that guide their conduct, work habits, and relationships. Today, I'll mention a few that I've adopted myself. You can decide how they might apply to your future. First, no matter what you decide to do in life, do it the right way and be your best. Always do it with integrity. Tigers manager Sparky Anderson used to tell us that it's not worth doing if you taint your accomplishment. Be tenacious. Think of all the nights you stayed up late, drank too much coffee, and coped with stress by scrolling through memes. You will face many obstacles in your life. Don't read your own press clippings and stay on task. I encourage you to become your own expert. Start living like the person that you want to become. Remain humble and always treat others with kindness and respect. A harsh comment can hurt another person, but a kind word can produce amazing things. Like each of you, I left MSU much more accomplished than when I arrived. My goal was to get a great education and be drafted in the NFL. Little did I know I would have a choice between professional baseball and football. I chose baseball because of the longevity of my career. And I was fortunate to have a 17-year career and win 2 World Series championships. By earning the honor of being here today, you are better prepared to pursue your calling in life. How far do you want to go? How willing are you to stay determined and pay the price? Think about it. I believe how vividly you can imagine something determines how real it can become. What is your will to succeed? What is your World Series? Think about it. Go for it. Think big. It might make you feel uncomfortable having me talk to you that way. That's because we all have a picture in our mind of who we are and who we can become. Our subconscious mind will always keep us as we see ourselves. So to win your World Series, to achieve your greatest goals, you must be willing to change your own picture of who you are today. I found the will to change my picture, and it transformed my life. And you can do it too, if you choose to. It begins with the power of positive thinking. In other words, developing a positive affirmation or idea that you imprint in your mind. Write down your affirmation as it has already happened. Then form a vivid image of what you want to achieve and imprint that image in your mind by recalling and feeling the emotions of other great moments in your life. Positive thinking gives us control over what we let into our subconscious mind. It changes a negative into something good. It reminds us to treat people with respect. It opens our eyes to the joy of being a blessing to others, giving credit to our teammates, our coworkers. It strengthens our character and prepares us to take on any new challenge or opportunity. And best of all, everyone who meets you will want you on their team. I got noticed in high school because a scout went to West Bloomfield, to see another player. He just happened to see me score 2 touchdowns for Waterford Kettering. So everywhere you go, you're being observed and scouted. You're being recruited. That led to me being recruited to the Spartan football team. I was the last guy they picked up that year. But because I made the most of it, because I was determined and had great resolve. That attitude also helped me meet some great mentors in my life. A good mentor is someone who cares about you, gives you honest advice, and warns you when you're headed in the wrong direction. Sparky Anderson was a great mentor. In 1983, my worst year in baseball, he said to me, "Kid, your habits are all going in the wrong direction. I'm going to bring you to your knees this year. You're going to be a designated hitter. When the easy pitchers are pitching, you won't play. When the Hall of Famers are playing and pitching, the tough guys throwing the hardest, I'll let you play. That's it. You either change your attitude or I'll send you home to your mommy." The next year, I homered against the San Diego Padres in the World Series, and we went on to win in 5 games. From mentors like Sparky, I learned to slow down and listen. They help you change your future, mentors do, begin your journey towards a successful and meaningful life. All those lessons that I've talked about so far came home to me in the 1988 World Series between the LA Dodgers and the Oakland Athletics. We were down 4-3 with 2 outs in the bottom of the ninth. I had an injured knee in one leg and a torn hamstring in the other. I was watching the game on TV in the Dodgers training room. This little voice in my head was saying, "Stay comfy. You don't want it in this game at all. You got a torn knee, torn hamstring. Just stay comfortable. Don't go out there and face the great Dennis Eckersley." But I never listened to those negative thoughts in those situations, because that's when I do my best. That's how I see myself. To imprint that thought, I remembered the 84 World Series when I had homered off Goose Gossage. How when I rounded the basements, my teammates were jumping up and down. The celebration, the Tigers fans going wild. In my mind, I could still feel that excitement. I painted the moment about to come. How thrilling it was to experience such a moment. Backing out of this challenge was not an option. I told my manager, Tommy Lasorda, I was ready to hit. some reason, he agreed. And that was a World Series for me, a moment, my second, with two outs, a full count, and no knees. I homered over the right field wall, and we won the game and went on to win the World Series. After you leave here today, your own World Series can play out in a similar way. In your first job interview, you will be confident being uncomfortable. It may not work every time, but you'll always have a go-for-it state of mind. This is how you can win your World Series. Set ambitious goals for yourself. Big goals. Be a team player. A true definition of a champion is winning as a team where nobody cares who gets the credit. Your team's success is your success. That's true at work, and it's true at home. Family and friends are everything to me, as I'm sure they are to you. The greatest blessings in all my life are my wife, Joanne, my best friend and love of 31 years, and my four children, Colleen, Kirk Robert, Kevin, and Camera, my sisters, Jackie and Tina, and the woman whose love helped make me all that I am, my mother, is here with us today. Thank you, Mom. You know how much I love you. Everything you have learned here has prepared you for great challenges and opportunities to come. But tomorrow, when the excitement of graduation is gone and you're striking out on your own, will you be ready to write your own success story? Only you can answer that. A great university is known by the quality of its graduates. When you leave here today, you will carry Michigan State's reputation with you. I hope you honor that, and I hope you do it proudly. The parents, families, and friends who have come to honor you today deserve your gratitude. In countless ways, they have given you the foundation for a better life, and you have made the best of it. Cherish it. Cherish them. Thank them. Parents, grandparents, brothers, sisters, aunts and uncles, your teachers, that special friend, thank them all for what they have given you. Always remember that ours is a free country where you can conceive and achieve anything, fulfill any dream, and master your own destiny. The human mind has great power and potential. Work hard and push forward with unyielding energy as you pursue your dreams. Be bold. Never, ever give up. If you believe you can, you will. You've invested a lot to arrive to this great day, but there's still a lifetime ahead of you. You took a gamble to get here, but this is not Las Vegas. What happened here must not stay here. Go share it with the world. You are Spartans. I believe you will. Spartans will. Who will? Who will? Go green!
Go white!
Go green!
Go white!
Thank you.
That was Kirk Gibson's May 5th MSU commencement address. To hear it again, click on the radio tab at WKAR.org and scroll to MSU Today. WKAR. I'm Russ White for MSU Today. Our United States Senator from Michigan, Debbie Stabenow, is a proud MSU alumna. Senator Stabenow, welcome to the program.
Well, Well, Russ, it's great to be with you in Go State.
Senator Stabenow, can you please talk a bit about how your time at MSU has impacted both the person and the professional you are and are still becoming?
Well, it's very much a part of my life. You know, I grew up in a little town in Clare, about 90 miles north of Michigan State, and came down to go to state. It was the first time I'd been on a big campus like that, coming from a small town. It really exposed me to all kinds of people with all kinds of backgrounds, really broadened my view of the world, and gave me so many opportunities to learn so many different things. So it really was the beginning of a journey of curiosity for me about learning, great professors, opportunities to get exposed to all kinds of things. And on top of that, I think it's the most beautiful campus in the world, you know. So it was beautiful. There's nothing like a fall day walking beside the red cedar and looking at the trees. And there's really nothing more beautiful than campus.
And what does it mean to you, Senator Stabenow, to be a Spartan? And how do you carry that sort of Spartan's will ethos into your daily life?
Well, you know, it's always fun to connect with people who are Spartans when I'm in Washington, when I'm home in Michigan, or when I'm traveling. And I think that we're all very, very proud, first of all, of the school and the opportunities and the reputation of Michigan State. I'm now in my role as U.S. Senator, I'm extremely proud of the research role, the international role. I've had the opportunity to travel in Africa and see firsthand the international agricultural role, helping those in other countries learn how to feed themselves and create an economy. And Michigan State has such an incredible reputation as a premier agriculture and research institution. It really makes me proud.
You had to be honored when President Obama chose to sign the historic Farm Bill on the MSU campus, really as an homage to you and your leadership on this important piece of bipartisan legislation. That must have been cool.
It was wonderful to host the president coming into my alma mater. I told him that you can't sign a farm bill in Washington. You got to come out and be someplace that's deeply involved in agricultural leadership, the first land-grant university in the country. So that's what he did. And what a great day. And he had a chance to visit some of the wonderful research going on at MBI and look at the food safety issues, the research around food and agriculture and productivity. And there's so many ways in which Michigan State, just in that area, not counting health, not counting so many other areas of research, where Michigan State and the students and the professors are having a profound impact on people's lives.
And for lay people, Senator Stabenow, who may not be plugged into the issues surrounding agriculture in Michigan and the United States, what's important for us to remember about what the Farm Bill does?
Well, first of all, it's our food policy for the country. So we have the most affordable, available, abundant food supply because we help farmers make sure that if there's bad weather, you don't get wiped out, that they've got tools to manage their risk, whether it's weather risks, other kinds of risk to manage their, to protect the water and the soil, price risks in the world, and then access to nutritious food. You know, the Farm Bill is about farmers markets and local foods and fresh fruits and vegetables in schools. And it's also energy policy and rural development. Any community outside of big cities in Michigan gets grants and loans from the Department of Agriculture for roads, small businesses, water sewer systems, police cars, fire engines. I mean, it's really the economic development support for small communities.
And Senator Stabenow, when you think about your alma mater's future, what are the higher education and MSU-related issues that concern you?
What I'm most concerned about is just making sure that college is affordable and that the funding is there for the critical research that needs to be done. There's a lot of folks today who, where I sit in Washington, pretty extreme folks that believe we shouldn't be doing research, whether it's healthcare or food safety or technology development. They don't believe there's a public role for that, which is a huge mistake for our economy and for Michigan State and other universities that play a critical role in research. That research not only brings breakthrough technologies, but it provides educational opportunities for students. And then the second piece is the overall cost. When the state cuts support for colleges and universities, tuition goes up. And we see students coming out of college with huge amounts of debt. So I'm very involved in efforts to both allow refinancing of student loans, create more opportunities for scholarships. You know, I grew up in Clare at a time where, because of my own personal circumstances, my dad was very sick. We didn't have any money. It was very difficult. And I wouldn't have gone to school. I couldn't have gone to Michigan State without a tuition and fee scholarship. So somebody somewhere thought that some redheaded freckle-faced kid ought to have a chance to go to college. And because of that, I was able to have a whole world opened up to me. And we've got to make sure that going forward, young people have the same opportunity.
And Senator Stabenow, what's your advice for young Spartans who may want to follow your footsteps into public service?
Well, I think the most important thing is to get a degree and something you're interested in, anything that you're interested in. We need people in public service that have all kinds of backgrounds, from criminal justice and education, medicine, business, agriculture. You know, in a democracy, you need folks with all kinds of knowledge and skills. So find something you're passionate about, get your education, and then get involved in the community.
That's MSU alumna and United States Senator from the great state of Michigan, Debbie Stabenow. And I'm Russ White for MSU Today.
Sing our love for alma mater and thy praises, MSU.
Salagadoola, Metricaboola, Bibbidi-Bobbidi. Together, and what have you got?
WKAR.
For listening to MSU Today on 94.5 FM and AM 870 WKAR. To hear segments from today's show and more MSU Today content, click on the radio tab at WKAR.org and scroll to MSU Today every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock on 94.5 FM and AM 870 WKAR.